This is The Record on KUOW. If you've lived in Seattle for a while, I don't have to tell you, it's growing like crazy. And that pace will not stop. By 2035, Seattle's expected to grow by 120,000 people. So the city is redoing its comprehensive plan for growth, and city officials are looking for input on three alternative proposals to guide growth over the next 20 years. Earlier this week, we talked about channeling growth into urban centers, like downtown and the University District. We also told you about the urban village option, channel growth into neighborhoods like Ballard and Columbia City. Today, I've taken a bus and light rail to the Beacon Hill neighborhood to learn about a third option under consideration. It's the channel growth based on transportation options. Josh Brower is a member of the Seattle Planning Commission. He's also a land use and real estate attorney, and he's lived here on Beacon Hill for 16 years. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
So how would channeling growth based on transit differ from these other two options, channeling it towards urban centers or urban villages?
Channeling growth into the transit communities really builds on and strengthens the 20-year policy that we've had as a city using urban centers and urban villages. The idea is that we as a community over the next coming decades are going to be spending billions and billions of dollars improving and expanding our transit system, both by expanding the light rail system, by building streetcars and trolleys, and also by more bus service, including Rapid Ride. And what a transit community does is it looks using a metric-based mechanism. What you're doing is you're tying those transit communities to our existing urban villages and urban centers. The difference is that if you look at the boundaries of the urban centers and urban villages, they were drawn through a political process involving the neighborhoods many, many years ago, and they aren't based on a walkshed or any metric analysis. The transit communities, again, brings that metric-based analysis to this equation.
Now, here we are on a kind of a brusque day at the Beacon Hill light rail stop. And when we look around here, has anything gone into what we see in this neighborhood based around this idea that you should plan growth based on transit facilities?
Yes and no. About 3 or 4 years ago, the city did an update of the Beacon Hill neighborhood plan and looked at how we could change the zoning around the transit station, the Beacon Hill light rail station. So there has been a recent planning effort to look at how we can expand growth and bring more density around this transit node. The difference is we didn't do that process as a city using the transit community's policies and mechanisms that the Planning Commission helped develop over the last 4 years.
Okay, well, going forward, if we do it right in the next 20 years for Seattle 2035, how might a transit-based comprehensive plan change what we see around us?
What you'd see, the change would be that the transit communities asks the city, using the public funds that we all pay, to lead with what we call the necessary components of livability. And those are things like parks, open space, schools, community centers, libraries. So Beacon Hill, again, is a perfect example. A couple blocks to the south of the light rail station, we have a library that was recently renovated. Across the street is El Centro de la Raza, which used to be a public school and is now a community center. You've got Beacon Elementary and Kimball Elementary blocks in either direction from the light rail station. So again, the idea would be that we would change the zoning around transit communities, within transit communities, to allow more density and more vibrancy. The studies all show that you need to have a certain level of density to achieve vibrancy. The studies also show that if people can live without a car, they have 14% more of their income that they can spend on other things, such as the cost of housing or food or other activities. So again, the idea is we're channeling all of these funds into building this fantastic transportation system. We should change the land use and zoning around those nodes of frequent and reliable transit.
So promote denser housing areas, which means taller buildings, more people living here. What is around this station right now in terms of housing options, and how might that change, for example, right where we're standing now?
So just to the south and a little bit to the east of this light rail station, there's a brand new building going up. I think it's 6 stories. That's the first major new development on Beacon Hill that I've seen in the 16 years that I've lived here. That's of that caliber and size. That's the type of development that we would want to encourage within transit communities. You want more density, more vibrancy. Using the transit community's policy to change the zoning up here would hopefully encourage more of that type of density and development that brings with it the vibrancy.
Okay, but what if you moved here because you liked a single-family detached home and all of a sudden six-story apartment buildings and fourplexes start to go up nearby.
65% of Seattle is zoned detached single-family housing. We've got one of the highest percentages of zoning for detached single-family housing of any major urban city in the entire U.S. There's really no shortage of detached single-family housing product in this city. What we don't have is density and vibrancy around the transit that we're spending all of our money as a community and as a society building. So really, there's more than enough room for both types of housing.
Josh Brower is with me, and we're at the Beacon Hill Transit Center where the light rail takes off and jets are flying overhead on their way down to SeaTac Airport. And we're talking about this neighborhood as a model for a transit-focused plan over the next 25 years. And we're talking about this neighborhood as a way that that could happen.
What people complain about often over the last two decades when density has come is that they say we didn't get the quote-unquote amenities, that we were promised that X, Y, and Z would be built, and X, Y, and Z didn't get built. And generally, the way it's been done in the past is that the city has required the developers to build those quote-unquote amenities. We want to change the language that we're using and change the conversation. These aren't amenities. This is not the icing on the cake. It is the cake. These are the necessary components of livability, and we as a city should be helping to build those by taking the money that we're now just spreading around the city like peanut butter and concentrating and prioritizing our development, our community funds to build parks and open space and schools and libraries around transit communities.
One critique I've heard of the last comprehensive plan is that it directed growth to certain areas, but it didn't include the kind of amenities that needed to be there. So when we're talking about amenities that would want to be here if this is going to be a denser neighborhood, what are we talking about? And is that a change from the way amenities are now around the city, things like parks?
Absolutely. The change is that right now we don't necessarily have a prioritization system on how we spend our public funds, our capital improvement dollars, tied to the policies within the comprehensive plan. The transit communities policy that the Seattle Planning Commission put forward really makes that connection direct and strengthens it. What that says is instead of spending our capital improvement dollars, like spreading them around the city like peanut butter so that everybody gets a little, what you do is you focus and prioritize those capital improvement dollars into transit communities. So again, we're not talking about quote-unquote amenities. These are the necessary components of livability that we should be spending. For example, we're standing next to a festival street. That's, again, money that we as a society paid to build this. And those are the types of things that we should be doing around light rail stations and other frequent and reliable transit nodes, community.
You make a very convincing argument. I mean, what's the hardest thing about actually making this happen?
I think it's fear of change. I think people really think that density is bad and that change is bad and that multifamily housing might mean people unlike them. I think the struggle for people in Seattle is that we want that vibrancy. We want the ability to walk to great shops and great restaurants. But we also think that we should live in detached single-family housing and be able to get in our cars and drive everywhere. And again, all the data shows that you have to have a certain amount of density per square, per acre, to support shops and restaurants and the things that we all want.
That's Josh Brower. He's a member of the Seattle Planning Commission and a land use and real estate attorney. The city is looking for input on how to guide our growth over the next 25 years. If you'd like your concerns to be heard, you can visit the website 2035.seattle.gov, or you can send an email to 2035@seattle.gov. And you can learn more from our coverage. Go to KUOW.org and search for Seattle 2035. This is The Record on KUOW.